philosophies in my experience and my experiment.
So this week, as many weeks really, I've been thinking about creative expression and self-expression. And it came about because when I signed up to do my full voice training, one of the things that I wanted to, you know, like one of my intentions for taking part in the program was to have free expression. As in, whenever I am not necessarily here, because this is something that I've done enough and I'm on my own, but as soon as I'm plugged into another person, there I feel this pressure to like deliver something or to be exceptional or to, you know, give the other a transformational experience. And so or to provide some kind of like profound aha for the other person. And what that does is really adds this like low underlying anxiety to everything that I do, like when it comes to, or anything that I perceive as a risk. And I've been talking about this on Instagram this week, about how, you know, what I had actually done was so this goes for podcast interviews, when I used to do interviews, anytime I do a live on Facebook or Instagram, if I'm running a group program, sometimes even in one-to-one sessions, it depends on the person and how available they are to me. And by that I mean, like, are they open or are they like closed off and not necessarily recognizing me? Like, what's their energy? Or when I'm on stage, when I, you know, the second that I hit, I call it red button syndrome. The second that I hit record, it's almost like I feel this pressure to perform and it derails me and it stops me from being present and it stops me from delivering something that is actually of value, because I'm in like self-preservation protection mode. All of those things I perceive as a risk to my safety. So the adrenaline kicks in and I'm kind of like buzzing, you know, it's like, I had a session with my kinesiologist Tari yesterday and we were talking about it. I was like, I feel like I just get into this mode where I can't shut it off. It's like the adrenaline kicks in. I feel heightened. I feel sweaty. I feel like, and then I just feel like I go and I cover the same point over and over again because I want to like make sure that I drilled the point home, and you know, and so I just go on and on and on and on, and I'm not necessarily, there is a point where there is a bit of self-criticism going on for sure, but there's also this like this ominous feeling of the next moment. I don't know if anyone can relate to this, maybe it's just me, but like there's this like sense of where am I going next. And it's why I stopped doing podcast interviews, because though I loved the conversation, often I couldn't be present to it because I was thinking about, oh my god, when she finishes talking, where am I going to take this, you know, oh god, what's the next profound question going to be, rather than just like recognizing that wherever I go it's enough, you know. And when I was talking to Tara, I was like, the funny thing is, like, I understand that the people who love me love me regardless of whether, and part, I think part of my charm for them is the fact that I rabbit on and on and on and I cover the same point 10 times. Like, they're forgiving of that because they recognize me. So it actually doesn't matter how I show up, whether I'm a rambling mess or chill as fuck, the people who recognize me are still going to recognize me. So there's nothing really to be panicked about. But when it happens is those moments where I perceive that I'm at risk. And I wrote a post on Insta about a moment that I had when I was probably about 14 years old. And I was I loved to dance. I loved to perform. And I was doing a dance exam, like a stage exam. And it was a character piece. And I, as a kid, I loved the Cabbage Patch Kids, and they had an album in the 80s. It's on Spotify if you look up Cabbage Patch Kids. And like, I just used to love that album, and me and a friend of mine, or a few friends, I just used to make all my friends, but I had one particular friend, Kylie, and we would just listen to the album all the time. And I knew all the words, and you know, and so when I was 14, I think I was about 14, I did this character piece for a dance exam, and I was dressed as the stork from the Cabbage Patch Kid, you know, the stork that would deliver the babies to the cabbages. What the fuck? And so I did this dance, and I was dressed up as a stork. It was a great costume. My mum made it, had feathers. You know, I had like this black vest on with CC, which was Colonel Casey, I think that was the name of the stork. And I've practiced this dance. And part of the dance was me. I had like a nappy tied around my neck with a Cabbage Patch Kid in it. And the Cabbage Patch Kid was like safety pinned. Its back was safety pinned into the nappy. And as I was dancing, there was this scene where I kind of flapped my wings and moved up and down like I was about to start flying. And the Cabbage Patch Kid flipped out of the nappy, upside down, was hanging from the safety pin. So it was like just, you know, hanging there. And as I was flapping my wings, the Cabbage Patch Kid's head was like bouncing off my vagina. It looked like basically I was head fucking this Cabbage Patch Kid. And of course the audience laughed because it was funny. But for me, it was just humiliating. Just humiliating. And I recovered well, and you know, I put the doll back in and I finished the dance. And then as I finished, the curtain actually came down on top of me. And then there was more laughter, and I was kind of stuck there and scrambled back through the curtain, you know, and I was just absolutely humiliated. And so it's moments like those that have caused me to, or have created this program within me, which is like, when I'm taking a creative risk and I'm doing something that I love, I'm gonna fuck up. So I, you know, so I get this anxiety, I get this, the performance anxiety is in part due to that, but it's also in part due to 100 other experiences that I've had like that. And I think we can all relate. You might not have been head fucking a Cabbage Patch Kid on stage with, you know, hundreds of people laughing, but you would have had moments. You know, I remember my first memory is me coming out of the toilet at preschool with my pants down and everyone sitting on the floor at reading time. And they turned around and saw me still pulling my pants up and laughed. You know, like we all have these moments where we've put up our hand and given the wrong answer and people have laughed at us, or we've tripped over, you know, and like all of these little experiences create self-protection, you know. And maybe we became the class clown, because if we're gonna have people laugh at us, we might as well, you know, like at least own that. And so even, you know, the class clown can be a protection mechanism. So anyway, while I was doing this session with my kinesiologist, we kind of did, you know, we talked about like what could we do that would change that for me as a 14-year-old girl. And part of it was like, well, you know, if I just fully owned that, like if I just fully owned that fuck up, then, and saw it for what it was, which was actually a really funny moment. Not, you know, it wasn't like people were laughing at me because I was an idiot. They were laughing at me because something funny happened. And so what if I owned that completely? What if I, if after I stumbled off, you know, crawled my butt under the curtain to get off stage, what if I stood there and when the curtains reopened, I did a massive curtsy and was just like, this is me. you know? Like, and from that, like, what happens? Well, the audience stand up and they clap because they're like, fuck yeah, you fucking owned that, you know? And then I saw myself leaving the stage and coming out after the performance into the, you know, you'd go out into the foyer and see your family and all that kind of jazz. And I saw everyone kind of coming up to me saying, that was amazing. You really, you know, you really nailed that. And it just changed everything for me. It didn't change the fact that it had happened, but it changed the way I saw or felt the humiliation. It was no longer humiliating or embarrassing. It was, you know, funny and actually a really fucking good moment. And so from that place, like, because that's like, this is the whole thing, right? Whenever I used to have performance anxiety a lot when I would do public speaking, and I don't enjoy the feeling of like anxiety and anticipating failure, because that's really what I'm doing, is I'm anticipating my fuck up. And so it's stopping me from being present, it's stopping me from really connecting, and it's stopping me from truly impacting people and enjoying myself, which is the main fucking thing, right? Like, I'm not enjoying myself when I'm anticipating. It's just not a really fun experience. And so why would I want to do that shit when I know that when I'm in the moment and I'm present, because I've had those rare moments in my life, I know that I actually really love being on stage. I really love doing interviews. I really love that stuff. But my anxiety hasn't allowed me to, you know, it's made me think I hate it. It's the same with art and creation and singing and dance. All of those things have been marred by experiences that I've had when I truly love doing them. I truly love singing. I truly love making art. But the anticipation of failure means that I'm not able to really be in it and enjoy it. So I end up thinking that I don't necessarily enjoy it. And so I leave it, you know, when the truth is, if I'm present and I'm not anticipating the next thing, I actually really do fucking love all of those things. So, So my voice teacher that I've been working with in the full voice stuff, five element voice framework, or the five element framework, has been, you know, she had mentioned, because I talked a lot when I signed up for that program, my intention was to have freer expression and to not have the red button syndrome. Like, when I hit that red button, you know, like the go live button, to stay in the present and not get swept up by the anxiety. And one of the things that I used to do was to help with my performance anxiety was to create all this ritual, right? So I would create ritual around an interview, and I would light a candle and I'd burn some fucking incense, and I'd say, you know, I'd set my intention. I'm going to experience calm, flow, ease, you know, whatever. I want the guests to experience this, you know, I want the audience to experience, like, and what I was actually doing was making it something, making whatever I was about to do something that's probably a lot bigger than it actually is, you know? And so what I'm actually doing is focusing on how, like, it's kind of reinforcing the need for me to be on edge and to, you know what I'm saying here? Like, it's like what we put our attention on, we create. So yes, while I'm putting my attention on how I want to feel and into my intention, what it's actually doing is reinforcing somewhat, because it's based in the fear that I'm going to fuck up, right? So I'm focusing all my attention and intention on having a good experience in avoidance of the bad, if that makes sense. So I'm creating it to be bigger than what it actually is. And I was talking to my vocal teacher about this, and she had said, have you ever heard of Bobby McFerrin? Now, Bobby McFerrin is the guy who sang, "Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy." Now, do 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 do. Don't worry, do 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 do. Be happy, do 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 do. You know that song, right? Everybody fucking knows that song. Maybe Mabel doesn't. Maybe that generation doesn't. But like, you know, if you're in your 30s or 40s, you will know that song. And I actually thought the guy died, but he's not dead. He's very much alive, and he's actually a really accomplished jazz musician. And I thought, so Barbara, my vocal coach, she had mentioned Bobby McFerrin and the fact that he just moves through. He doesn't do any pre-show warm-up. He doesn't do any pre-show ritual. He basically just moves from his life to the stage and off the stage, and it's all the same to him. And I was like, oh my God, I want that. I want to be able to, that's what I desire, right? To be able to be the me that is singing in the car in front of people without fucks about, or stress about, like, what's next? What if I fuck up? What if, you know, what if they don't like what I'm singing? What if I look like a dickhead? All of this stuff. Like, if I could just move through life like I'm singing in the car, that'd be the sweetest fucking thing ever. It's like the, you know, it's like he has the same reverence for life, whether he's folding the washing or he's on stage. It's all sacred to him. And I think that's such a fucking cool philosophy. Anyway, after like, I was just actually going to fitness training, and as I was driving down, I was like, I'm gonna check out this Bobby McFerrin and see what he's about. And so I looked on Spotify and I found him, and of course his number one song on Spotify is Don't Worry, Be Happy. And then there's, you know, four that got the top five songs or whatever, and one of them was called Improvisio, or Improvatio, I don't know how to pronounce it, Improvisio number one. And it's just him improvising live on stage. And it's like, whoa, this man can make such incredible noises and music with just, it's just a cappella, just him and his voice. And I'm like, whoa, this is fucking incredible. And it got me to thinking about, you know, like, this is just something that comes naturally to him, and he brought it to an audience. And I think most of the time we spend our lives, and I think I talked about this in the last episode, you know, looking for our thing, looking for our thing that we're kind of exceptional at. But what we're doing is marking it against other people. So it's like, yeah, I sing, but I'm not as good as Beyonce, or I'm not, you know, for me, it was always like, I always was surrounded by other good singers. And so it was always like, well, I'm never the lead vocalist. I'm always like sometimes I'm not even picked for the band, you know? And so this means that when I think that I want to sing, I think it has to look and sound a certain way. When, what if I just Bobby McFerrin did, and I was like, well, you know, this is me, this is my voice, this is what comes naturally to me. And this goes for everything, right? Like business, art, you know, whatever it is, moving through life with the knowing that whatever you bring is enough. And so that's kind of where I'm at the moment, is like, how can I drop that anxiety? How can I move beyond this fear of constant, the constant fear of failure, and just embrace me in all my glory for what I am and what I'm not? So yeah, that's today's thoughts from the beach. That's it. Until next week, peace out.
Carlos and Bees, I'm Carly Nimmo.